Good afternoon, everybody. This is Barb Pello, Group Director at InfoTrends, and I'm delighted that you could join us for our webinar today, Specialized Publishing, Taking Hold of the Book Market and Taking Off. The word specialized applies to both ends of the equation. It's the information that's being published, as well as the audience that it's being published for, whether it's NASCAR, art, or topics of a more professional nature, accounting, law, medicine. Specialized information publishing is designed to reach a specific niche of people that have a very, very intense interest in a certain narrow field of information. The companies or individuals that make up these specialty markets are usually willing to pay more for highly targeted information that they want or in some cases that they need to do their job. What we're going to be doing during this webinar is really exploring specialized publishing applications. We'll talk about the definition of specialized publishing, how people find their niche, B2B and B2C opportunities, new methods to monetize specialized publishing programs, and that changing print and digital landscape. Before we get started, what I'd like to do is make sure that everybody understands how to effectively enjoy today's webinar. First of all, if you have any technical difficulties, you can troubleshoot by clicking on the Help button widget at the bottom of the console, and it's marked with a question, or you can let us know via the Q&A box. You can also use the Q&A box to submit questions for today's panelists, and we'll be addressing those throughout the webinar, so as you submit them, we'll try and get them responded to. Anything we miss, we'll pick up at the end of the hour. You should turn off any pop-up blockers on your computer so you can utilize all the widgets, bells, and whistles on the console. And speaking of bells and whistles, please click on the Tips for Attendees widget below to learn how all the widgets, what all the widgets on this console do and how to customize your experience today. Now let me start by introducing your panelists. I'm joined by Andy McLaughlin, and Andy is the founder, president, and CEO of Paperclip Communications, and they specialize in providing information resources to the education market. In addition, Andy serves as the chairperson for an organization called SIPA, the Specialized Information Publishing Association. And so Andy's going to share both his user perspective or creator perspective on specialized publishing, as well as a little bit about the direction that SIPA is taking. I'm also joined by Dale Williams, and Dale's the Vice President of Operations and Technical Sales at Strategic Content Imaging in Carlstadt, New Jersey. And they produce 1-, 2-, and 4-color on-demand books, textbooks, periodicals, and other products that service the publishing, financial, and healthcare markets. And finally, Chris Green is joining us, and he's the President of CGX, or Consolidated Graphics Publishing Solutions, where he's been since 2003. And he oversees the latest digital technologies with a specialty in the on-demand book printing market. He also has with him Steve Wilson, VP of Digital Sales. In terms of the content we're going to be covering today, I'm going to spend just a couple of minutes introducing the concept of specialized publishing. Then I'm going to turn over to Andy McLaughlin, and Andy's going to give you, again, a producer of specialized content perspective, as well as talk about SIPA. And then Dale and Chris will talk about how technology is enabling, driving all of that change. When you think about specialized publishing, what companies are looking at that are publishers are finding their niche in the information age. The business model of the specialized information publisher is to find that special niche of people who, for whatever reason, have an intense interest in a certain narrow field of information. Sometimes the niche might be a group of consumers who have a particular hobby or interest in their personal lives. Could be something like knitting. And in this specialty market, they're willing to pay for more highly specialized information. In other instances, there could be things on investments, health, and travel that are aimed at a consumer special interest group. My favorite example is a consumer newsletter that you might recognize called the Kiplinger Washington Newsletter, which was first published in 1923 and is thought to be the longest-running, continually running newsletter. In most instances, a lot of it is business-to-business, and this market consists of companies or individuals within companies who need specialized information about their industries that may not be available or is extremely difficult to find without the efforts of a specialized information publisher. and they're willing to pay a much higher price for that information. I thought I'd share with you a couple of examples. In the financial market, they use a publication that's called Inside MBS and ABS. For 25 years, this firm has provided the most in-depth coverage and comprehensive statistics on the mortgage-backed securities market found anywhere. Every week, subscribers get exclusive rankings of the top issuers and underwriters of the non-agency details on GSE activity and hard-to-find numbers on mortgage-backed securities investor profiles and loan securitization rates. Another example would be HC Pro, and they're a provider of integrated information, education, training, and consulting products and services in the vital areas of healthcare regulation and compliance. A very hot topic these days. The company's mission is to meet the needs of specialized information and advisory educational needs for the healthcare market. HC Pro provides specialized information in a variety of products that includes magazines, newsletters, books, videos, audio conferences, training handbooks, email newsletters, and online courses. And then another large publisher is Access Intelligence. And they're a leading worldwide information marketing company that provides unparalleled business intelligence and integrated marketing solutions for nearly a dozen global market sectors. They provide magazines, newsletters, conferences, data products, and e-media solutions to key major markets ranging from aerospace to communications. The key inside of all of these markets is everyone is looking for relevant information. In a world where people are inundated with information, the key is finding out the information that is relevant to them as an individual. According to Outsell, the information market is a $366 billion business. The key is effectively getting what you need for your job, your hobby, your specialized area of interest. The big challenge today is that all channels are on. The way readers want information is changing so rapidly that we need to embrace this evolution strongly, and we need to provide information via reports, webinars, conferences, and social media. I tell folks, think about the publishing challenge today. Sometimes we're dealing with 140-character tweets. Sometimes it's a 2,000-word thought leadership piece. Other times it's a 50-word snippet or a blog. And everybody wants it formatted for mobile, online, and print distribution. So those are the challenges we're dealing with. What I want to do now is turn it over to Andy McLaughlin. And what Andy's going to do is share a little bit about Paperclip Communications, as well as how SIP is helping its members deal with these challenges. Take it away, Andy.
Thanks very much, Barb. That's an outstanding introduction, and I want to carry forward on some of the thoughts that Barb was talking about, and I want to use my own company, Paperclip Communications, as kind of a springboard to talk about what specialized information is and what kind of products are involved in specialized information. So what is specialized information? And I use this very simple chart kind of graph to demonstrate what it is. It's a process of looking at niche communities and then feeding niche content into those niche communities, which is a very simple concept, but there is a very big business model behind that very simple concept. So a lot of times at cocktail parties and with friends, people will say, well, you know, how niche can you get? And the truth of the matter is that you can get quite niche-y when you break it down. So again, using Paperclip as a starting point here, some people might consider the education market to be a niche market. At Paperclip, we take that a little bit further, and we have an entire division of the company that services only the higher education space. But we go even further than that, and we don't service just the higher education space. We actually service what's called student affairs inside the higher education space. And that's the core of our business model, is servicing the student affairs market inside the higher education space. And that's the core business that I started nearly 18 years ago, and that's what we've built the business on. So we are quite niche inside of a niche, and and that's how niche-y you can get, and that's what specialized information is. And when we talk about the Specialized Information Publishers Association, the trade group that I'm currently president of, those are the kinds of companies that you'll find inside SIPA. And so when we talk about, for example, medical publishers, some of those medical publishers might be publishing strictly in medical coding. When we talk about a company that's publishing in public relations, they may be focusing strictly on a specialty kind of PR. When we talk about a law publisher, they may be publishing portals or publications that are focused on a specific litigation area. I know of a publishing company that, you know, does litigation on certain types of mold. And so, again, it gets very, very niche-y. However, when the information is highly specific, highly targeted, it becomes highly valuable, and you can charge very high dollar amounts for that information. And so that that becomes a very real business model that can become very valuable. So, again, focusing on paperclip as kind of the business model that we'll take a look at as kind of our case study, we as a company service K through college with information services. Annually, we serve about 3,000 colleges and universities. So even though we're very niche, we still reach over 1 million parents, students, and campus professionals every year. So even though we're very niche, through our various products, we do impact and touch quite a few people. And we do that through a variety of products. Up on the right-hand corner up there, that's an example of one of our kind of training portals. Just below that, series of brochures that we do, print brochures that are distributed through institutions. We do webinar series very similar to the webinar that you're listening to today. And just above the webinars, a binder, products that we do very similar to books, et cetera. But our business has changed just as I'm sure many of the businesses who are listening in today, your businesses have changed. And that change has been brought about by technology and digital impact. And just in the last 5 years, all of the training content that we have produced has migrated to an online platform. Our event business has become entirely virtual. We no longer do live events. And most of our newsletter content is now migrating to a digital format. So we are feeling this technology and digital impact, and the same can be said of many of the companies in SIPA, the Specialized Information Publishers Association. However, print is far from dead at Paperclip. And so I wanted to show you this particular product. It's a product called Transitions. It's a new print product that we have developed over, I think, about the last 18 months at Paperclip. And it is the kind of product that is taking advantage of some of the new technologies that are available to us today. And what's kind of exciting about it is that it is developed to take advantage of short-run print technology. It's developed to be customizable for each campus. It's a product for veterans who are transitioning back onto a college campus. And if you can see the product on your screen, you can see all that white space above the graphic. That white space is all there so that a campus can put their own logos and things like that on the product. And if you were able to see inside the product, campuses are able to put all their own contact information inside the product. And whether a school needs 300 of these or 3,000 of these, they can fully customize this product And that's the kind of thing that, you know, as little as 5 years ago, I don't think we would have been able to produce this kind of a product. And so, again, this is the kind of thing that technology is making possible. We're able to put this kind of thing on a content management system, make it available to the customer so that they can update it themselves, do a lot of the customization themselves, and that's all very, very exciting stuff. And so I think it shows a little bit about how the content is changing and our own product mix is changing.
I've got a quick question for you.
Go ahead.
You basically provide to the users of this some level of syndicated content that they can then pick and choose from to ultimately create this product that they can send out to veterans, and they then balance that against their list of potential recipients?
I think the syndicated content part is right. Customization in some – we don't let them customize the content. They can't change text. We want to control the text.
Right.
We don't want them changing, say, the advice portion of it.
Okay.
But, you know – it basically, when the product is done, the end user would not necessarily know that it came from Paperclip Communications.
Got it.
It looks as though it came entirely from the institution.
Okay, great. Thanks, Andy.
Similarly, some of our binder products now are in a place where we can take a little more risk. This is a new binder that we're just launching on cyberbullying. We can take a little more risk on some of our topic areas because we can do shorter runs with print on demand. So, you know, we're not tied into, you know, long runs, and we have to be more sure of the topic. We can take an editorial risk, hire the writer, get the product written, put the promotion out, and because we don't have the tie down with the longer print run, we're more comfortable exploring some new topic areas. So it allows us a little more editorial flexibility to reach into some new places as well. So, again, that's all possible because of some of the new print technologies that are out there. And, again, lots of SIPA members are experimenting with very, very similar products, very similar formats, and that's all kind of new areas for many of us. So, who is SIPA? Their business is very, very similar to my business. My business happens to be on the smaller scale of some of the SIPA members. We run from very small companies up to companies as large as $500 million organizations. SIPA members are commercial information providers serving the needs of niche communities. We are about 400 global members. We have members around the world, very active in Europe, as well as North America, obviously. Most of our active members, the folks you would see at our meetings, are C-suite type folks and upper management level folks. We have a very active vendor member community as well, serving those global members. What we see at SIPA, when we take a look at what the information industry is going to look like, if you take a look at the very bottom of this chart, you'll see that we really see, you know, very bad news for people who are simply in the news business. News has very much become a commodity. And lots of our members used to be in the news business. That's what they used to provide. There's much more opportunity now for providing news in conjunction with analysis. You know, just providing the news isn't going to cut it anymore. We need to be telling our users what this news means. However, most of our members are in a position and a place where those top three items are really where the opportunities are, and most of our members are taking advantage of those top three items, search, aggregation, and syndication. We see some concepts like content curation, which is almost like a kind of content concierge, if you will. We are all in a place where we're a little overwhelmed by the amount of search availability and what's available when we search, not only just on a basic Google-type search, but even sometimes in the places where we pay for information, even just returning a search on a Wall Street Journal or other pay places, sometimes those searches can be overwhelming. Market research, reports and services, benchmarking data, things like that, very valuable information. And another big opportunity is education and training, and I'll talk about that just a little bit more in a moment. Our members are very much taking advantage of those top three areas. So six trending opportunities that at SIPA we very much see, and I'll talk very quickly about those. Mobile. I think we're all aware of how powerful our mobile devices are becoming, and you know, you need only ever go to any industry conference, regardless of what industry you're in, and just watch how much everybody is tied into their mobile device. People are getting very used to receiving all kinds of information via mobile, and the expectation is becoming greater and greater that you will receive information and data, and that it is no longer simply a communication device. Video represents a great opportunity. The number two search engine online now is YouTube. That's where more and more searches are taking place, and so video is becoming a very important place for all kinds of information to show up. Apps are also a trending opportunity. We happen to think, thank you for forwarding that, we happen to think that we have kind of hit the tipping point with apps where the development costs have come down to a point where it is very possible for really any organization of any size to develop an app, and that the usability has come to a place where it makes a lot of sense for lots of information to be housed in apps. We think training is a very viable place for information providers to be, and one of the reasons that this has become so important in this recessionary environment, or exactly where we are, we're not sure, is because training as a budget area seems to have a little more protection than information budgets. The training budgets, and particularly when it comes to compliance areas, seem much safer. And so lots of our members have moved into training areas, particularly e-learning areas, and that seems like a much safer line item to be associated with. Talked quickly about content curation, and that is the idea that if you can select out for your users, for your readers, what is the important piece of information, even if those information sources are coming from other places, that is, other information sources. It doesn't all have to be your original content, but you're placing in front of your captive audience, these are the important pieces of information for the day. You're curating that content. You become the go-to source of information and therefore capturing the eyeballs. That's very important. And then this last item is one that is kind of a personal favorite of mine, and it's kind of something that I kind of study, and that's because I'm involved heavily with the college market, and that is the idea of digital natives. And the idea of digital natives are a group of people who have never been never lived in a world that they were not wired into. They grew up always having had an AOL account, always having had 300-plus channels of television, and all kinds of other digital practices, and they are changing the way that we consume content, and they also are now entering the workplace, and you may also hear them referred to as millennials and a couple of other names, and they are starting to really take a strong foothold in our offices, and as I said, you will start to see them changing the way that content is consumed in your office place. And they're a trend that publishers need to really start to pay attention to. So those are some of our six trends. How can SIPA help? Well, SIPA can help by we do a number of things. We help network folks. We help provide benchmarking. We provide a lot of sharing opportunities, and we can provide connections and ways to help advise you on the specialized information publishing world. We are having one of our major conferences in Miami, December 7th through 9th. It's not a bad time to be in Miami. If you are like me and living in the Northeast, it's a pretty nice time to visit Miami. So if I can provide you with any information on that or any of SIPA's services, please don't hesitate to email me, and I certainly appreciate the opportunity to be on the call with everybody today. Thank you.
Well, that was outstanding, Andy, and thank you so much for both your insight as well as a good overview of specialized information publishing. What I'm going to do, and by the way, please key in your questions. What I'm going to do next, though, is I'm going to turn over to Dale Williams, and Dale's going to share with you how technology is really responding to the needs of people that are in the specialized information publishing environment. And so with that, Dale, I'm going to let you take it away.
Okay, thanks. I think one of the big comments that were made previously is that the challenge for publishers today, especially as the world gets more niche-y, which I think was a nice word, is how do they stay relevant in this world? So we service a lot of the major publishers, and I'll just get right into the presentation here, so excuse me if I mess up. I'll spend a couple of minutes just doing a quick overview of the company, or else I would never hear the end of it, so I have to give my two-minute speech there. But then I'll talk about how we're using the latest technologies to help our publishers do exactly that, stay relevant, save money, and so on. So here we are. So some quick fast facts about the Command Company and Strategic Content Imaging specifically. The Command family of companies is a very large group of companies, about $280 million in annual sales. And we have a bunch of individual companies within this family, Strategic Content Imaging being the digital print arm and the pre-media arm of the company, of the entire group. We also have a company called Sierent, which does a lot of web-to-print and a lot of the new fancy electronic programs for those niche markets. And we have the Command Web and Binary Graphics for the conventional arm of the company. And we also have Unimac Graphics, which is a commercial part of the company. Now, interesting for the company, each division is pretty autonomous and independent, but we certainly come together when we could take advantage of large corporate synergies. Some more fast facts. We do over 2 million books a day, so it's pretty large company, and I'll skip some of the stuff and get right down to some of the really important ones. But with over 40 years experience in operation as a printer, you know, there's printers that struggle on a day-to-day basis. So to be around for 40 years and to be very financially stable is certainly beneficial in today's market. So there's my two-minute commercial. But that leads to some of the things that we've done recently. And when I put this slide up, the important things that I see on this slide is that all these investments were made in the last 12 to 18 months. So just to show that having that financial stability in this economic period really helps us to prepare for the future, because we think that Prince still has a long life ahead of it, and we're preparing for that. So just to give a quick overview of some of the things we've done in the last few months as far as investments are concerned, we've really beefed up the print side. We have a few Kodak Digimasters for one color, and we've increased the capacity of those to be the 300-page-a-minute models. We have a couple of Indigo 7500s on the four-color side, a Zycon 8000 digital web, and for those in the know, you can see that this is a significant arsenal of printing. And, of course, to top it all off, we have an HP T350 inkjet web, which certainly is a lot of firepower. On the finishing side of the business, because you can't just print anymore, you got to be able to do just about everything, we have the Magnum Flexbook on the back end of the HP T350. And what's important about that is the speed at which the HP runs is very significant compared to any other four-color digital print device. So you really need some healthy firepower on the back. And what the Flexbook allows is to print at an extremely fast rate, but do a book at a time. So it's very, very advantageous to be able to do that and not have to do longer runs. That certainly helps us in the financial and healthcare markets. We have a Mueller Martini Sigma line, which is a very high-quality, high-speed, perfect binder and trimmer. And we have an ODM hardcover line, which is a very high-speed line to do hardcover books. And brand new, we also bought the Ibis Smart Binder for saddle stitching. And just when it isn't enough to buy all new printing and all new finishing equipment to modernize your plant, you have to provide the software and the workflows to make them go faster. So we have the Avanti MIS system and the Xerox FreeFlow, and that to help us with that. So we like to joke around and say that there's no need to ever go to a print show. If you're ever in the New York City area, you could stop by our plant and see everything that's new and the latest and greatest of everything. And with that said, we'll get more in line with what the topic is about, which is this specialized publishing and how do we keep print relevant. This particular slide shows, I think, the trend that we've all been seeing over the past few years is that the number of printed pages has been going down, the cost of the printed pages has been going down, and a lot of our customers in the publishing segment are trying to transfer and put as much of their pages online as possible. Now, what's interesting here is if you put a line representing digital print, I think you'd see that that trend's more in line with the online trend versus the other two. So digital printing certainly is coming into its own, and with the introduction of inkjet technologies, I think you'll see that have more and more of an impact on these publishing trends. And what does this mean for people in the book and journal publishing? In the book and journal publishing, we see a whole host of different types of programs to help solve some of the issues that the publishers are dealing with. Each one of these programs could probably be an entire webinar in itself with the amount of information that and analysis that goes into creating these programs. But the types of programs that we see and that we're servicing in the book and journal publishing are programs where our customers are using inventory management software to manage their reprint programs, and they're putting it in a call it a set it and forget it type environment where these books go in, and they spend the rest of their lives being managed by data systems and the inventory systems in the back end of a warehouse. And as a certain number of units go down, the reprint automatically comes in. You also have the virtual inventory programs, and I think just about everybody's familiar with these, which are the programs that exist virtually, the titles that exist virtually for books and journals, and when they're ordered online, they're immediately ordered and fulfilled within 12 hours. So that's another program that is gaining momentum. custom publications for the, especially in the education market, as Andy talked about, very, very large growth for every major publisher. I think every major education publisher now has a custom division that probably has grown at least 15 to 20% year on year for the last 5 years or more. So that's something they're seeing, which the custom publication is essentially professors and teachers, whether it be K through 12 or in higher ed, creating books specifically for a certain class. Number four, which is the personalized versions, and by this I'm talking about things like photo books or other branded content. That is a whole market within itself, but a very specialized solution for the publishing industry. And to finish that off, you have the non-traditional publishing, which I think digital printing has invented the self-publisher, or at least reinvented years and years ago, so that now they could makes it a lot easier to be a self-publisher than it did prior to the advent of digital printing. The benefits to the publisher are well known, and we've been preaching these for years. But I think it's the technology now, especially in the inkjet technology, that's really making the cost something that really benefits these programs and is starting to see a lot of volume heading that way. So moving on here. If we look at the magazine and catalog publishing, same technology, but other different challenges that they have to, I mean, staying relevant in the magazine and catalog business is now something they deal with on a day-to-day basis. The newspapers dealt with this, and in most of our minds, I think we all think the newspapers probably failed a little bit in keeping relevant in the news. So what do we see for them to stay relevant? We see them creating more customized content in magazines and catalog, which are far beyond the regional editions that you're seeing today. We see personalized advertising within magazines and catalogs, and we see that coming very quickly, which will be an interesting paradigm shift in the near future to see how that takes off. And some interesting facts about branded publications and how they're taking off throughout the world. The top circulation magazine in the U.S., of course, after AARP the magazine, or AARP Bulletin, and AAA Tour Books, is the Costco connection. So we see these commercial entities whose primary business is not publishing getting into publishing and really reaching their customers through printed products, which, as a printer, we love to see. Here's an interesting slide as well. And what this slide speaks to for me is that there's a significant amount of trust with advertisements placed in magazines and catalogs versus other ways of receiving advertisements. I won't get into these itself, but I think we all realize that the average person might spend 40 to 45 minutes in a magazine touching and feeling the ads, whereas if they actively try to block pop-up ads on their computer, or God forbid, now we're getting advertisements on our cell phones. So this trust factor and the challenge of staying relevant, the publishers were now starting to see them use print as an online gateway. And I think the slide from the previous presenter is absolutely accurate, that everybody, the whole world is going mobile, and everybody has a phone within their reach. I mean, mine's going off as I speak. So I think the trust of the printed piece, along with some dynamic feature to allow it to stay relevant, is something that you're going to see a lot more of as we're moving forward. Using print as an online gateway and these technologies that are converging. So image recognition software, like QR codes, which I'm sure everyone probably didn't see a year ago, which everybody's now probably starting to see a lot of, along with the ability to print a lot of pages on a high-speed inkjet web, can reduce the cost and print in mail sequence order these magazine inserts or catalog inserts that can be merged with static content. And if you think about the impact of that, I think it's pretty significant on what that can mean for specialized publishing.
Dale, I had a quick question because not everybody understands technology. Could you explain just briefly for the audience why high-speed inkjet is so important?
Sure. But I'm probably going to run over on time, but I'll
That's
make it
right.
as quick
you gotta,
as I
you
can.
Another, I'll give you an extra minute.
Yeah, well, what makes inkjet printing so significant and why it's a game changer is that it's very fast compared to other digital print technologies, and it's also significantly cheaper. On the one color side, you might be looking at a 10 to 15% reduction in cost. And on the four color side, you might be looking at 50% or more versus some toner based solution. So it's really relevant because you can get a lot more out and you can get it done for a lot cheaper.
Great. Thanks.
Sure. As I was saying, this convergence of technology using the high-speed inkjet to print personalized copies or sections that can be added to magazines or catalogs or even, you know, any other type of book and allow that end user to use their smartphone to get to link into the online world is really going to be a trend that I think everybody will look back and wonder where that started. And I think you're looking at the very beginnings of it through the magazines today with the QR codes and some other image recognition software. So just in closing real quick, where do we see the future and the future direction? We think as a company, we think that publishers are going to require their print partners to be certified in managing their data security, which is the new ISO, I don't know how new it is, but this is the ISO 27000 standard, and it's something we're actively pursuing at SCI. The future in publishing, we believe that publishers are going to continue to develop the automated inventory management systems to a much, much greater degree. As the cost of the printed page goes down, the break-even point will go up, forcing a lot more titles into this digital print area. And with that, with the lower per-page cost that inkjet brings, we think that you'll see a distributed print model become much more common. And what does that mean? In terms of books following something like the newspaper and magazines, where they had regional print and distribute centers, similar to like the Wall Street Journal and other newspapers such as that, you'll see for books. And with BNC, as the warehouses shrink for our customers, we see central warehousing operations serving multiple publishers becoming a major new channel of business. So that's on the book side. On the magazine and catalog side, we definitely see personalized printing becoming a bigger and bigger piece of the business, and that connective printing, the use of these image recognition codes to be a really big trend that printers are going to be able to take advantage of.
Dale, before you wrap, I'm going to ask you one final question, and I'll also ask Chris Green the same question when he gets done. We have a participant that said basically that they're moving into custom publishing, and they've got basically highly curated city guides that are 192 pages, 6 inches square, and they'd like to run them in quantities of 250 to 500. Do you think that inkjet is going to start to make those competitive with traditional printing in terms of price levels at those run lengths?
Certainly 250 to 500 would be ideal for digital print. And especially the inkjet, we think, will approach more into the 1,500 or higher for a break-even.
Okay.
And really, once you get to that point, the question is if you could replace some copies in as little as 5 or 10 days, how many do you really need to keep? So if you were printing 500, maybe you go down to print 250 and just do a reprint later on if you need them.
Okay. Terrific. Now what I'm going to do is I am going to turn it over to Chris Green. And Chris is from Consolidated Graphics, And I'll let Chris tell you a little bit about Consolidated Graphics and the kinds of things that they're doing in terms of the specialized publishing applications for their client base. Take it away, Chris.
Thank you, Barb. And I think, you know, the first two speakers did a really good job, and I think in Dale's instance, you know, we do operate in a little bit of the same space as SCI. They're a great company and do a lot of cool things, and we have a lot of the same capabilities. So a little bit of this will be redundant, so I'll avoid spending a lot of time on those things, but we'll kind of jump in here. CGX, which is Consolidated Graphics, just again, kind of like Dale, the people I answer to wouldn't be real happy with me if I didn't give you at least a 30-second commercial. Consolidated Graphics is a public company founded in 1984, and today represents about $1 billion in revenue, 6,000 employees, and 70 operating companies in this country and internationally. So we are not a historic book printer, but we do. There isn't a whole lot that Consolidated Graphics doesn't effectively produce in one of their locations. And now we can add short-run custom publishing to the list of things we're good at. The CGX Publishing Solutions Group was formed a few years ago, basically taking advantage of an opportunity within the custom publishing vertical. We don't have a long history of producing books, but what Consolidated Graphics does have and what the CGX Publishing Solutions Group kind of sought to capitalize on is Consolidated Graphics does have a great history of building, you know, distribute and print. I know a lot of times we say distributed manufacturing, but I like to say distribute and print models in other verticals, for example, the photo book space. And our objective has been to replicate that effort in the custom publishing world. So our market entry, and it's kind of interesting, you really see, technology's impact on a business day-to-day. We were, CGX Publishing Solutions Group was doing rebinds. And for those of you who aren't familiar with that term, it's as simple as, you know, taking a case-bound book and chopping the spine off and throwing some obsolete parts of it in the trash and reprinting a section or a few chapters or a foreword and a new cover and rebinding the book. And we saw pretty quickly that business was going to go away as we saw digital inkjet web technology evolving, and that business did end, which was fine because at that point we started printing just short-run, perfect-bound books on offset stock on an InfoPrint 5000, and shortly after that, we became a beta site for the HP T300. We actually put the second one in the world on our floor, and off we went. And I think as part of Consolidated Graphics and the CGX Publishing Solutions Group, we're really committed to understanding all the new digital platforms and technology that exists, and it's changing quickly, and knowing the strengths and weaknesses of all that. And again, kind of like Dale, we have spent a ton of money at this company in the last couple of years, and I'm excited about it, but I don't know if the people I answer to are, but we're going to continue spending more and more. It's tough to keep up, but it's a lot of fun. So who's using the technology? Again, not to be redundant because Dale hit on this, but you know, the kind of the low-hanging fruit is the educational publishing market. That really became the case, or that really was pushed forward when we and other people had the ability to print on an inkjet, digital inkjet web press on 45-pound mat stock. And then more recently on 70 and 80-pound coated stock. And that got us to the point where, and I think this is a great word, litho-replaceable, meaning that, a publisher can print 5 eval copies or they can print 50 books at the beginning of a life cycle, and, you know, then they can print 5,000 of them or 50,000 of them on an offset press, and then at the end of that life cycle, come back and manage that life cycle and print, again, shorter runs as demand requires. And that paper, the image quality, and the price points have been reduced to where that digitally printed book can be handed to a student or a consumer, and they're really not going to be able to tell the difference between the eval copy or the initial copy that was printed digitally on an inkjet web press compared to the longer run that's printed on a conventional press. And I think that's really, I know Dale used the word game changing. The equipment manufacturers, and we also like to use the term disruptive technology, because at that point I think it really changed how publishers viewed, the life cycle management of their titles. It just changed the way they have to manage them and gave them a lot more flexibility and being able to produce what is considered digital litho-replaceable books. And then obviously also it allows them to produce custom books, short runs. The biology professor can go in and choose, disparate chapters, create his own book, write his own foreword, and order 50 of them or 500 of them and produce those books very cost effectively. POD is an overused word, but I think it's applicable for, other smaller publishers, special interest publishers, comic books, B2B, where it's probably less about custom content and lifecycle management. It's just as simple as they don't have as great a demand for their titles. So ideally, they would print 500 at a time, and now they can do that cost effectively. I think right now, if you went to a lot of special interest publishers, the feedback we've gotten is maybe 25% of their titles they're able to convert to an inkjet digital web press, and 75% of them maybe still don't fit, and that's because of the quality and the limited availability of different coded stocks. But that's going to evolve quickly. The mills are working on it. We're working with the mills to develop that. So as the coded stocks become more available and the coding on those stocks becomes better, the quality becomes better of how these presses print, I think you're going to see in the very near future being 12 months, that is going to start to swing for the special interest publishers, that they can start moving, that equation will flop, that now 75% of their titles this technology is applicable to, and maybe 25%, still require offset quality. And then lastly, another application that I just think this is kind of interesting. Obviously a lot of titles and a lot of books are now read, on e-readers. And, not that long ago, people were taking printed books that were PDF and converting into XML to an XML format for e-readers. Well, now people are just building books in XML with the intention of just making them available on e-readers. And companies like Book Brewer have made it very easy for people for self-publishers to make their books available to the general public. But what we found interesting is now that that's created demand for the people who intended their books to just be available electronically on e-readers, now there's a demand to print those books. And so the opportunity to take a book that's in XML and convert that to a PDF and to print a short run, be it one or be it 10, is really risen as an opportunity for printers. I think it's as simple as if you go to the trouble and you put forth the time and effort to write a book, you're going to want a printed copy of it. You're going to want to give one to your friend and your mom and your sister and your brother. And I think something that speaks to this. I heard somebody make a statement not too long ago, and it was someone from a publishing company. And they said, still, if something is important or valuable, it still gets printed. And we obviously as printers hope that that's the case for a while. I got a couple more slides. I know I'm running a little short here. Dale touched on auto replenishment. You know, I said on my last slide that POD is kind of an overused word, but automatic replenishment, in my mind, is really the evolution of print-on-demand. And I think a good way to think about it, or an easy way to think about it, is, if a publisher wants to keep 100 books in inventory, they keep two boxes of 50 books on a shelf sitting next to each other, and the warehouse pulls one box of 50 books off the shelf and ships it, you know, without anybody having to issue a PO or send an email or pick up a phone, a order to replenish those 50 books automatically gets sent to the vendor. And not only that order is received, but there's a bidirectional exchange of XML information that basically, you know, lets the publisher know that the printer has received the order and that it's in production, and that actually the book can be tracked then, invoices sent out, shipping notification and confirmation, et cetera, all can be done through an automatic replenishment model. And then obviously that's, all this technology and programming and production capabilities, you know, they're all driving towards being able to produce, you know, a one-off book effectively, and automatic replenishment. Automatic replenishment is a big part of that. Trying to keep an eye on the time here, I'll just hit this last slide, and that's in terms of what we see in the future. Dale alluded to this: is more and more titles get pushed to this inkjet web technology, the automatic replenishment models. You know, it means when you used to order 5,000 books, and that was, you know, that was one PO, and that was one, you know, that was one, you know, set of shipping instructions and et cetera, et cetera. You know, now if that becomes, 100 orders of 50, I think my math is right there, when that becomes 100 orders of 50 over the course of time, you know, the solution to that for the publisher and the printer, you know, can't be just throwing people at paperwork and handling both the processes inside the publisher and inside the printing company the way they've always been. We are working hard to develop, that exchange of XML information for production purposes, rules-based automation internally at printers so that, again, there's fewer touches. And then we see it's going to be interesting to see how e-books evolve. How they affect this vertical. We know the quality is going to continue to improve from these printing devices, as well as the finishing devices and the papers as well. And then, it's all going to drive the price points down at the same time, as has been previously stated. And then lastly, my last comment is it's been really interesting, this timing of image conversion to inkjet. You know, I think like a lot of new technologies, people see it and they think it's great. But sometimes it's a different reality or a different story to watch them figure out how to apply it to their business. I think in this instance, I think the technology that's been produced by the manufacturers and the printers have embraced is actually further ahead than I think than a lot of the publishers expected, and they're still trying to catch up and figure out where the opportunities, you know, lie for them to apply it internally, you know, at their companies. So I went through that pretty quick, but I wanted to keep this on schedule,
Chris. I'm going to just ask everybody, if you haven't submitted a question, to take a second and do that. We've got a few minutes for Q&A. And while you're doing that, I think what you heard from our speakers today was that all the channels are on and cross media is here to stay, and it's really time to embrace it. We're dealing with a world that's print, mobile, social, and online. I also think you're hearing that there's a tremendous number of enabling technologies that are letting you evolve and personalize content as you gain insight into your user base. And you're hearing a lot about automating and efficiency. And so as you take a look at the market, again, tremendous opportunity and a lot of technology that's readily available for you and your team. The first, I do have one question. It's for Andy. And Andy, they said there's a lot of discussion on technology and technologies that are available. How do you make a decision on what types of technologies to use or service providers that offer you specific solutions? Because you're clearly not a printer. You're a content guy.
Right. How about if I answer poorly?
Well, that's fine. Poorly is all right, Andy.
Well, first of all, we're driven by what the customer wants. And,
yep.
somebody actually once, commented to us that we actually, as a company, even though we serve the higher education space, which is, some of the best wired and unwired spaces in the world, they were actually tremendously slow to take up digital products. And even today, as we moved a lot of product into digital formats, we still have customers call and say, but what happened to my paper? You're just constantly reacting to, what the marketplace is looking for. Does that answer your question, Barbara, or are you asking?
Yeah, that's good. And so then quick question for both Dale and for Chris, and then we'll wrap up. But when you take a look at your businesses, are you equally capable of distributing content both in print as well as electronic form for your clients based on their needs? And I'll start and I'll ask that first of Dale.
Yeah, well, that's actually the intent when the company Strategic Content Imaging was started, was to provide that content in whatever format you would like. So, of course.
Okay. And how about in your case, can you provide content any way the customer wants it? Chris?
Yeah, we can. I mean, and I think back to one of those slides in there, I mean, the conversion of XML to PDF and back has become, a place we spend a lot of time because it's not just printing books. People are going to want their content distributed a lot of different ways, and that's only going to become more and more the case as we go down this path. So I think if you wake up 5 years from now and all you're good at is printing a book, I think you're really going to limit how good a resource you are to your clients.
Well, I'd like to take a second to thank HP for sponsoring this webinar, as well as thank our presenters for doing a great job of talking about specialized information publishing. And I'd also like to thank our audience in terms of their participation. And if you'd like to take the opportunity to or for additional information about the webinar series, you can obviously go to bookbusinessmag.com. In addition, there's a feedback survey, and you can open this browser and actually fill out the feedback survey. So we'd appreciate any and all insight. And with that, thanks very much for everybody joining us, and have a great rest of the day.